We're in Numbers chapter 27, verse number 12, where Moses is in his last couple of months of leadership with the Israeli people. They've had a second census they've taken because all of that previous generation that the first census was taken of, they've all died off. We've got the problem with the Midianites that's still going to be resolved under Moses' leadership. We know that Moses is also going to deliver what we refer to as the book of Deuteronomy. It'll be his final address to the Israeli people. So he's got all of that, and there's going to be 1 month of mourning over him at the end of the 40th year of the Exodus. But God is giving him a heads up that his death date is rapidly approaching. And God has the logistics of that already in mind. So Numbers chapter 27, verse 12, "He who is," said to Moses, "go up into this mountain," and I don't think it's not a command for him to do it right now. I think it is, you will go up eventually, into this mountain of Abarim. That's the ridge line that's immediately to the east and above the plains of Moab, where the Israelis are currently encamped. It's got a nice panoramic view of the Dead Sea and Jordan Valley. And you can even, I believe, on a nice clear day, you can kind of see the Mediterranean off in the distance. But I think God is going to give Moses something special from that place. It says, "You go up into this mountain of Abarim, and you're going to see the land that I've given to the people of Israel. And when you've seen it, you also shall be gathered to your people as your brother Aaron was, because you rebelled against my word in the wilderness of Zin when the congregation quarreled, failing to uphold me as holy at the waters before their eyes." These are the waters of Meribah of Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. So that's a reference back to an event that happened at the beginning of this very year, the 40th year of the Exodus, when Moses and Aaron, probably both very irritated with the Israeli people, forgot themselves, Moses in particular. And he strikes the rock instead of speaking to it, and he says, "How much more do we have to do for you rebels to provide water for you?" And God got after him about it. Said, "No, you cannot show disrespect toward me in front of the people like that. You don't get to go into the promised land." So here we are at the end of the year, only a couple of months before they go into the promised land. And God says, "All right, now your time out is about to occur. Your punishment, your consequences for what you did at the beginning of the year. But I am going to allow you to get a good, clear view of the promised land before I turn you off physically." Because we know from later that Moses dies at the age of 120, but his strength was still at its peak, and his eyesight was still perfectly fine. His hearing was all perfectly fine. He was still in really good shape. So God just basically turns him off and then buries him. So here is God telling him, reminding Moses, "That's coming up, sir." Or not sir, but "That's coming up, Moses." Moses is prompted by this to intercede on behalf of Israel again. Remember, he has more and more become in his heart the intercessor of Israel. And so here at the end, that's what he shows again. Verse 15 first. "Moses spoke to he who is, saying, 'Let he who is, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of he who is may not be as sheep that have no shepherd. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read that line, I immediately think of the gospel story where Jesus looks at the people right before the feeding of the 5,000. And he has compassion on them because they're distressed, they're downcast, they look like sheep without a shepherd. And so Jesus is moved by the situation of the people in his day, just like Moses here is moved about the idea of what are they going to do when I'm not here anymore. I've been their leader, their intercessor, their prophet for 40 years. God, don't leave them without a shepherd. They need somebody. Give them somebody special. And so God answers that request with an immediate response, but also he gives him a kind of a promise that Moses will mention in the book of Deuteronomy later, that God will always provide leadership to his people and will ultimately provide an ultimate leader. And so the book of Deuteronomy chapter 18 becomes a messianic prophecy about Jesus, the prophet that will eventually come. But for right now, we're here in Numbers, so let's read God's response in verse 18. So he who is said to Moses, take Joshua. Now, isn't that interesting? The leader that's going to be here next is Joshua, and the ultimate leader is Joshua, Jesus. So take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit. So Joshua has already been functioning as Moses' aide-de-camp, his assistant, the direct commander of the Israeli militia for the last 40 years. So he is a very natural candidate for this position. So take this man, lay your hand on him, so ordain him. Make him stand before Eleazar the priest and all the congregation, and you shall commission him in their sight. So this is an important ceremony of transfer of leadership. So Joshua is not left to kind of assume it on his own after Moses' death. It is plainly communicated to all the people, well before Moses passes away, that the next leader is Joshua. Verse 20, you shall invest him with some of your authority, that all the congregation of the people of Israel may obey. So make it clear to everybody, he is the next handpicked leader. Verse 21, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before he who is. Now, if you've forgotten, the high priest wears a special uniform. And on the chest of his special uniform, there is a highly decorated pocket. It has 12 stones, which have the names of Israel engraved on this, on each of the stones. And there is a pocket behind all those stones. And inside that pocket are the Urim, the lights, and the Thummim, the judgments. My belief, which is based on the text plus some Jewish tradition, is that these stones are specially colored stones, but they glow in answer to a yes or no question or an either or question. And so this is a mechanism that God gives to the high priest for immediate responses from God. And the reason I believe they glowed is because if they didn't glow, then that would show that God wasn't answering at all. And we have an incident later with King Saul where God refuses to answer by the Urim and the Thummim. So here, Moses is told by God that Eleazar will function as the mechanism with the Urim and Thummim for Joshua to inquire of God. And we will see him do that on multiple occasions. It won't mention the Urim and the Thummim directly, but because of the way it's presented, we can surmise, I think, very clearly that that is what's being done. So at his word, they shall go out, and a lot of times it's talking about battle here, and at his words, they shall come in, both he and all the people of Israel with him, the whole congregation. So this is when Joshua gets tapped as the next leader. So Moses did as he who has commanded him. He took Joshua, made him stand before Eleazar the priest and the whole congregation. He laid his hands on him. So there is a transfer of power indicated by that symbol of laying on of hands, which is why we use it still to this day as an ordination ceremony. Many of us who have become preachers went through such an ordination ceremony where the elders, in my case, it was the elders of my home congregation, laid their hands on me, prayed over me, and commissioned me to be a minister of Jesus Christ, to preach the word in season and out of season, right? And so I've done that on the occasion for several other preachers that we've laid our hands on them and prayed over them as they became ministers of Christ. So that's kind of what is going on here. He laid his hands on him, commissioned him as he who is directed through Moses. Chapter 28. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, command the people of Israel and say to them. Now, we're going to now talk about regular order in the day-to-day life, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year life of Israel. And a lot of that life is centered around actions that happen at the tabernacle in relationship to the calendar. And so there's a lot of logistical information in here. I'm not going to repeat every last bit of it, especially if it's very, very often repeated. But we do need to be familiar with how the calendar went and how the worship cycle went. So here it comes. Command the people of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my food offerings, my pleasing aroma, you shall be careful to offer to me at its appointed times. Now, God does not need to eat food, but the presentation here is in a way that the Israelis can kind of associate it. Every last one of them eats food on a regular basis, and they cook it, and it smells delicious as it's being cooked. And so the sacrificial system is presented in that way, that God gets his meals at certain times each and every day. And so, verse 3, so basically make sure you do everything on schedule. Verse 3, you shall say to them, this is the food offering that you shall offer to he who is, two male lambs a year old without blemish day by day as a regular offering. So the first thing that comes up on the calendar logistics is the daily offering. Two perfect male lambs, year old. And then verse 4 says, the one lamb you shall offer in the morning, the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. Now, originally, it is my suggestion, my thinking, that the first sacrifice was offered shortly after sunrise, as the tabernacle began operation for the day. And that the second sacrifice was offered shortly before sunset as the daily work of the tabernacle came to a close. Now, through time, though, those appointments shifted toward the center of the day. And the reason we know that, not that we know that it shifted, but we know where it was at by the first century, because it's mentioned in the New Testament. The first lamb was offered at the mid-morning point. We say 9 a.m. usually as an easy way of thinking of it, but it was basically when the sun was at a 45-degree angle between sunrise and noon. The evening sacrifice was actually offered in the mid-afternoon point when the sun was at the 45-degree angle from noon heading towards sunset. And so the reason we know that in the New Testament is because we're told when they occurred in the Jewish day of that time. Jesus was placed on the cross at exactly the time when the morning sacrifice was offered, at the midpoint of the morning. And he died at the midpoint of the afternoon, exactly when the evening sacrifice was being offered. And so I think we can easily make the connection to these daily sacrifices representing ultimately what Jesus would do. He would be the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. And this was a repeated thing every single day of the Jewish year. Verse 5, you have some things that get offered with it. Also a tenth of an ephah of fine flour. A small portion of flour that gets mixed with a quarter of a hin of beaten oil. It gets made into something that you fry up into like a tortilla or a pita. This, verse 6, is the regular burnt offering which was ordained at Mount Sinai for a pleasing aroma, a food offering for he who is. Its drink offering shall be a quarter of a hin for each lamb, so that's morning and evening. In the holy place you shall pour out a drink offering of the strong drink to he who is. The other lamb you shall offer at twilight like the grain offering of the morning, and like its drink offering you shall offer it as a food offering with a pleasing aroma to he who is. So every morning you offer a sin offering to God. Every evening you offer a sin offering to God. That's the way that the Israelis kept themselves focused on the need to use sacrifices to stay in relationship with the holy God of the universe. So it's thought of as food for God. Now, these sacrifices continued pretty standard regularly with a few exceptions, like during the time that the temple had been destroyed between the time of the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians in 587 until it was rebuilt by Zerubbabel about 516, I think, or something like that, B.C. Then it stays standard up until the big break that happens prophetically in the book of Daniel. It talks about this in the second century B.C. Antiochus IV pretty much stops them from 167 until Judas Maccabee puts them back in place in December of 164 B.C. Then they'll continue regularly right through the New Testament period until the Second Temple is destroyed in the summer of 70 A.D. And then there's not been any of this ever since then. And I have no anticipation that another temple will be built. There's no prophetic requirement for it, I don't believe. There's certainly no scriptural requirement for it because Jesus is the final sacrifice. No other sacrifices are needed for the forgiveness of sins. All right, so that's the main sacrifice twice each day. verse number 9. On the Sabbath day, so every seventh day, the rest day, then there's two male lambs a year old without blemish, 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, and his drink offering. This is the burnt offering of every Sabbath besides the regular burnt offerings and its drink offering. So now we're going to start seeing additional sacrifices on special days. So the Sabbath day is a special day. There's a special sacrifice. Verse 11, at the beginning of your months, which is the month that they left Egypt. So it's the spring month. The month is kicked off by the first sighting of a visible crescent moon after sunset, right around the spring equinox. And so it kind of varies depending on, you know, how ripe the grain is and whether or not the priests that are seeing the crescent new moon believe it's too early or too late in connection with the equinox. So that's how the first month of the Jewish year gets declared. Well, when the sun comes up the next morning and everybody goes to the temple or the tabernacle, then these are the additional sacrifices that have to be offered on the first day of the month. At the beginning of your months, and so we start at the first month of the year, and then every month that starts fresh after that, you have this same special new moon sacrifice. Remember that this is a day off as well. It's a holiday. Every month kicks off with a holiday. You shall offer a burnt offering to he who is, two bulls from the herd, one ram, seven male lambs a year old without blemish. And then also, I'm not going to read through this whole list, a whole bunch of additional grain and liquid offerings in addition to the regular burnt offerings of the morning and the evening. So we know every day is special with two offerings. Every Sabbath is special with an additional some offerings. Every first of the month is special with some additional offerings. Then after that, we start talking about the holidays. Verse 16, on the 14th day of the first month is he who is his Passover. So the annual Passover meal is going to take place on the 14th. Well, the animal will be butchered on the 14th. The meal will be eaten on the 15th. Verse 17, on the 15th day of this month is a feast. 7 days shall unleavened bread be eaten. We know about this. On the first day, there shall be a holy convocation. So a big get-together, a special assembly. And then we're reminded, the Feast of Unleavened Bread Day, no matter what day of the week or it falls on, it's a Sabbath type of day. You shall do no ordinary work. But instead, you're going to offer this food offering. And it's going to be two bulls from the herd, one ram, seven male lambs a year old without blemish, and then all of the other grain and liquid offerings that go along with all that. Verse 24, in the same way you shall offer daily for 7 days the food of a food offering. So because the festival goes on for 7 days, you have to have special sacrifices added to the regular daily sacrifices and the Sabbath sacrifices as well. And then on the seventh day, that's the 21st of the month, verse 25, you shall have a holy convocation. So it's another assembly of the saints. And no matter which day of the week it falls on, it's considered to be a day off. You shall do no ordinary work. So this list just keeps on going through all of the holidays. In verse 26, we go to the Feast of Weeks, which is probably better known to us Gentiles as the Feast of Pentecost. And verse 26 says, you shall have a holy convocation. You'll do no ordinary work. And then besides the other sacrifices, you offer two bulls from the herd, one ram, seven male lambs a year old, and then all of their grain offerings and their liquid offerings, make sure all this stuff is perfect and no blemish or anything like that. Chapter 29, we come to the other festivals. Verse 1, on the first day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation. Now, you normally take the first of any month off, but on the first day of the seventh month, there's a get-together, a worship time. You shall do no ordinary work. It is a day for you to blow the trumpets. It's the Feast of Trumpets. You shall offer a burnt offering for a pleasing aroma to the Lord, one bull from the herd, one ram, seven male lambs a year old without blemish, and then all of the grain things and all of the liquid things. In addition, verse 26 says, to the burnt offerings for the new moon and its grain offerings and all of the other offerings, including the two daily offerings as well. And all of this is a pleasing aroma of food offered to he who is. And then that brings us to the 10th day of the 7th month. On the 10th day of this 7th month, you shall have a holy convocation and afflict yourselves. This is Yom Kippur, which we've talked about in detail before. It is the Day of Atonement. It is not a festival day. It is a special worship day. Everybody has to get together. Nobody's supposed to be working. Everybody is supposed to be fasting. That's what's meant by afflicting yourselves. You shall do no work, but you shall offer a burnt offering to he who is, a pleasing aroma, one bull from the herd, one ram, seven male lambs a year old. See that they are without blemish. Then we've got the grain offerings that go with them and the liquid offerings. And then besides this, verse 11, one male goat for a sin offering besides the sin offering of the atonement and the regular burnt offerings and its grain offering and their drink offerings. And you know this is the special day on which the high priest goes into the most holy place and puts blood on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. We've run out of time. When we come back next time, we've got one more big holiday on the Jewish year schedule to talk about.